The Bank of Ghana has begun investigations into the role played by board of directors and managers of the UT and Capital Banks, which led to their collapse. As a result, the Bank of Ghana has frozen the accounts of the board of directors and managers of the two banks. According to the central bank, the accounts have been frozen to enable it to establish if any suspicious transactions were conducted using those accounts. Meanwhile, the Bank of Ghana has begun implementing a roadmap aimed at addressing weaknesses in the banking sector. So where does this leave us? We have on the line a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School, also a financial analyst, Dr. Lord Mensah. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Good evening to our listeners.
Doc,
let me make this correction. I'm a senior lecturer, not
right.
A lecturer.
All right, thank you very much for the correction. Doc, first, what do you make of the collapse of the two banks in the first place?
Well, I would say it does not surprise me, looking at the dynamics and then the history of this bank, the two banks. These are banks that were operating in the form of microfinance, and then later they turned out to be non-bank financial institutions. Then they have to evolve to become universal bank. Now, transiting through all these dynamics, you realize that they come in with some assets. Now, remember, if you are a microfinance or non-bank financial institution, the kind of market that you target in terms of loans that you give out, in terms of deposits that you take in, is different from becoming a normal, universal bank. Now, all the loans that they transmitted from being a non-bank financial institution to a universal banking institution, chunk of them has, the high probability of defaulting. So when you turn a universal bank, I was expecting that this bank will operate, restructure their assets. Now, restructuring their assets means that if you take a typical bank in this country, their asset side of their balance sheet, if I say their asset side of their balance sheet, the banks operate as if they are normal entity or corporate entity, which on the balance sheet is going to have assets and liability. Now, the asset side is the loans that they've given out, and the liability side is the deposit that they've taken from people. Treasury bills and all those normal savings and current accounts and all those. Now, if you take the asset side, a typical bank in this country, which is a developing country, has its asset concentrated in loans. So the physical asset is even on a small side, relatively, in terms of ratios, the total asset. And then also the cash that is ready for them is also on the minimal side. Most of them, they have high concentration in loans. Now, that is the total asset. That means they are playing on interest rates. But the question that comes in mind is, how concentrated are these loans? Have they given the loans to only one sector? That if that sector has trouble, it will end up affecting the entire bank, activity. And that is what happened to this bank. What happened was that they transmitted through those transformations from non-bank financial institutions to a universal bank institution where they have a lot of, let me put it this way, toxic assets. Assets that are likely to cause problems for them. And in the end, when they transform to be a bank, they never restructure. Now, let me also look at the board of these two banks. Now, these are boards that they transition from, non-financial institution to a universal bank. So you realize that the board that is coming is more or less a relative that helps you to build up the bank. It's more or less a friend that helps you to build up the bank. So when they transform to be a normal bank, for effective board, a board that when they speak, it can bring changes. Because before a bank collapses, the signals come, it's clear on the ground. You will see the balance sheet not balancing. you will see that a lot of liabilities are being incurred at a point in time. If you don't take care, what we call interest income will be less than the interest expense. So it means that you are going to spend more in servicing your liabilities than the interest that you earn as a result of giving out loans.
So in these processes, wasn't it possible for the central bank to have intervened to correct these anomalies for the banks to stand?
That's a very good question to ask. You are ready to help the bank, you know, resuscitate itself. But then how prepared is the owners of the bank? That is the board member. That is why my question, you asked me the question, I was driving to the board member, the kind of board members that they transit from being a non-bank financial institution to the universal bank institution. When it happens like that, it's a board of communism and a board of relatives, board of family, board of, you know, your child, being a part of a board member. Now, when it happens like that, the board is not effective. The board cannot buy. Now, if you look at board composition and performance of banks, the literature is enormous. What happens is that if you take a typical bank, the board formation, we expect that you have some percentage of independent, you know, person on the board. People who really don't have interest on that board. But then at the end of the day, what is the composition of this board that we had from, you know, these two banks that have collapsed? You don't get any independent. You even need a technical person, somebody who has nothing to do with the bank, but he has a technical, you know, capability to help the bank in case of any problem. So at the end of the day, the person will not be serving his interest. But if you have a board, that the board's interest is just to look out for profit to ensure that your shareholding grow. Normally, if you are lending to a sector that they know very well that sector will bring in returns to them without looking at the risk, I mean, they are happy. They know very well that if you lend to the government, they will be happy. They know very well that if you lend to the energy sector of this country, you'll get a return. And the board is not going to talk because of the composition. But trust me, if you have an independent board composition, obviously, and even the literature is so dynamic to the extent that as we speak now, they even say that you should have some number of women on your board for at least the conservative level of the board decision in helping the firm. So for me, I think the failure comes from several sources, and that is my mind.
But so Doc, with this, if these two institutions were to stay as non-banking institutions, would they have survived?
I think they would have survived because they developed their capabilities along that line, touching on the informal sector. And therefore, you know, something that a former bank cannot do. If you tell commercial banks to lend to those former, the sectors that these two banks were targeting, they will also collapse. So for me, I believe that they develop the capabilities, the resources, that they will be able to catch the informal sector. I mean, UT Bank started, and it was the bank that started by saying that if you want a loan within 48 hours, it's ready. But at the end of the day, if you take the loan and you don't use it for the purpose that it's supposed to be and you default, they have a way of getting their money. Sometimes they can even stop you on the road. Everybody is even afraid of them. So they develop a certain level of capabilities. That is why sometimes I blame the regulator in giving license to the firms that or banks that develop the capabilities for a certain sector of the economy. And in the end, when the bank yearns for universal bank transformation, they give license to this bank. I presume that the banks have been sectorial. Banks can be, you know, that universal banking law that we passed is good for the economy. But in the end, we should also look at how we can channel, you know, finances to the people who don't have finance. So if those two banks were to remain the status of non-bank financial institutions, I think it would have helped the economy rather than rushing to be a bank. And in the end, you couldn't sustain it.
Doc, the talk is that a substantial portion of the population still remains unbanked. We have about 30, I understand, institutions.
Yeah, that's financial exclusivity.
Yes. And so if that is the case, the talk would have been that, well, we will get more of our people to bank. Today, within 2 years, we had DKM, other financial institutions. Now we are talking of UT and then Capital Bank. Where does that leave us in terms of those we want to be banked?
Well, if I tell you about DKM and the small bank for non-financial institutions in the country, it is something that the central bank has lost control. They lost control over them. Why? Because most of these banks started operating before the central banks got to know them, before they went to register with the central bank. And immediately they got a central bank license, they assumed that they have an authority that is backing them. And they started taking on unnecessary risk. That is what caused DKM's collapse. And that is what is likely to cause any non-bank financial institution to behave that way. But then the central bank is not able to capture these individual banks because most of them started operating in the form of SUSU. And SUSU is not captured as a financial, institution. So before they assume that microfinance and the central bank comes to register them, for me, so many things would have gone bad by then.
Okay.
So it behoves on the structure. But now, what is happening now is serving as a lesson to the country. Now, banks have failed across the globe. But then, anytime a bank fails, it's a sign of an economy that did not perform some time ago. That is why the bank failed. It gives a signal. If we were to have a dominant financial system like a financial market, it would have started from there. But because we don't have a strong financial market, that is why it took some time for the non-economic performance to reflect in the financial system.
Okay.
And now it takes some time to touch on the banks. And now it's affecting the banks. You know very well that in the pipeline we have about 8 banks more to go in the line if they don't restructure within the next few months. Yes.
Why, Doc, I want to thank you very much for your time. Very grateful for your time.
You're welcome, sir.
Dr. Lord Mensah is a senior lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School. It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana. We are also, we've been joined on the line by the Member of Parliament for South Dai. He's also a legal practitioner, Nelson Dafiamekko. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, my brother. Good evening to all listening.
Right, thanks for your time. First of all, what is your take about the fate of the two banks now and the subsequent takeover?
I didn't get the question.
The fate of the now defunct banks and the processes leading to the takeover.
Interestingly, the affairs have been determined by the regulator in this matter, the Bank of Ghana. They determine their fate by saying that DCB should in a hostile manner, acquire these two banks in any merger and acquisition, in any typical merger and acquisition process. This sort of transaction or acquisition for a hostile acquisition.
So why will the regulator then start investigating directors and managers of the defunct banks?
Exactly my point. Because, you see, mergers and acquisitions, in any typical mergers and acquisition process, the takeover process cannot be done in a gung-ho manner as this one has been done. The process would have been initiated sometimes 3 months or 6 months before. And all the relevant reports and stakeholder consultations would have been done. Due diligence would have been conducted in terms of the portfolio analysis, in terms of assets, in terms of liabilities, in terms of the two P principle is the fact that if the processes are carried, the major takes if it takes place, the certain consequence in respect of some
Honorable, can you please reposition yourself? Your line is breaking.
Hello? Is it better?
Yeah, it's getting better. Go ahead.
Now my position is that in the course of negotiating the merger or the takeover, certain key things will have to be done. For instance, severance package to be given employees will have to be determined. Now, if that is determined, which entity will pay the severance package? Is it the entity that is taking over the two companies, or the two companies, the companies that are being taken over, they are supposed to pay the severance package to the employees? I don't know whether this has been done. You would have known by now that it is being said that the fate of about 900 employees for UT Bank and about 300 employees for Capital Bank are in the balance. Now, is the Bank of Ghana now going to negotiate in terms of the labor law the severance package to be given to these employees? Why wasn't this thing done before? Now, somebody will argue that we are not in normal times and that the things will have to be done under certain exigent circumstances. It is as a result of this that the due process of law should have been followed. Others argue that no law was broken. Who says? When a measure is being discussed in terms of the takeover of a publicly listed company, and yet we don't have the board of the state, the SEC hasn't got the governing board, what are you talking about? Now, where the shareholders, or for instance, GCB consulted in respect of this takeover, because the shareholders must agree that as a bank, we are in favor of the bank taking over Capital Bank or UT Bank or taking over both. It's the shareholders who must take this decision. The decision cannot be taken by the board before it is communicated to the shareholders. There ought to have been an extraordinary general meeting or an annual general meeting during which all these discussions would have been tabled. So if anybody says no law has been broken, I disagree.
So would there be legal basis for the shareholders to take action against their entities as UT and Capital Banks?
Yes. For instance, why would their bank go? So the question would be, if you look at the history of Capital Bank, for instance, this was a bank that began operating as, I think, first class capital savings alone.
Yes.
And then over a period of time, it attained a full-fledged banking status. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. Now, how come a bank that was able to mobilize capitalization to meet the Bank of Ghana standard to attain a full banking status, subsequently won several awards? This was a bank that 3 years ago won the best growing bank in Ghana, won an award in the best household and retail banking sector in Ghana. Again, won an award as the best collector in deposit collector in Ghana. Now, if a bank has took this award in all these critical categories of the banking subsector, how will such a bank be going under just a year or two after that? What sort of modality did the institution that gave this award to the bank, what modalities was it looking at? What indices were available? It means we are being duped somewhere. Somebody fraudulently telling out figures that is convincing this institution to look at the bank in terms with from a certain perspective that truly are not reflective of their system. Otherwise, that is the story.
Well, so sir, on the part of the customer, the savings rate for the UT and the Capital Banks those days were quite better than the GCB. And so if a customer had deposited her money there, maybe for 6 months, it is not due, GCB has taken over, certainly they are not going to pay the same interest. Can that customer go to court?
Indeed, it is not also the customers alone. It is interesting that we are receiving reports that as far back as 2016, Bank of Ghana, as well as the SEC, determined that UT Bank, for instance, failed to publicize its audited accounts annually. Now, the 2016 annual audited account would have been published because it says that you should publish it 3 months after the end of the annual year. So they ought to have published the account by the end of March 2016. Now, by April, they determined that they are not complying with the law. And yet, the shares of UT Bank were traded on the Ghana Stock Exchange until about April this year that it was stopped. So if investors within that period invested their money in buying the shares of UT Bank, such investors have a course of action against SEC. Because you see, if they had raised the red flag against UT Bank and not voted it shares after the non-compliance was detected as far back as April 2016, for instance, if I were the investor, I would have decided against investing in UT Bank. But because the regulator, which is the SEC, failed and or refused to raise this flag, other persons got their money and invested it in the bank, and now they are in crisis.
So do you foresee a litany of legal cases in court?
Yes. If these persons are really aggrieved, they can go to court.
So where does the state come in here, in maybe paying judgment debt or something?
No, it will not amount to a judgment debt. But their action would have been founded on negligence.
And who bears the cost?
Of course, it is the state, because they are state institutions. If the regulator neglected and or failed to alert unsuspecting members of the general public that the state that wants a publicly listed company has failed to comply with the law in terms of the publication of this annual account, it is no longer worthy to be invested in until they regularize that compliance. It's supposed to do that. And based on the non-declaration of that notice, I go ahead and invest in a company, in a bank, that a year after has now gone under. I should be able to bring you to tax.
Okay.
And take you to tax on that matter.
Right. Honorable, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
It's my pleasure.
Nelson Dafiamakwa is the Member of Parliament for South Dye. He's also a legal practitioner. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. Meanwhile, some customers of Unity Rural Bank. Welcome back. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Moving on to other stories. The Food and Drugs Authority, FDA, has since last year stopped registering body creams with bleaching agent. This revelation was made by the regulatory body when officials appeared before Parliament's Public Accounts Committee on the Auditor General's report on public institutions. So what necessitated this ban by the Food and Drugs Authority? We have on the line the head of Cosmetics and Household Chemicals Department of the FDA, Emmanuel Nkrumah. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. First, what constitutes bleaching creams?
Hello.
What constitute bleaching creams?
Okay, thank you very much, and good evening to our terrorist listeners. Bleaching cream, if we say something is bleaches, then it means it has the ability, that is for creams, lotions, and what we put on the body, it has the ability to change the complexion of the skin, that is from a darker skin tone to a lighter skin tone. And there are quite a number of chemical agents which have the ability to do that. And one of them is hydroquinone. We have some like kojic acid and the like, the number of products which you take. Yeah.
So are the effects of those same on every skin?
Please come again.
Are the effects the same on every skin? I mean,
yes.
if I use it as a dark guy, will the impact be the same as somebody fair?
Because if we look at the physiology of the skin, we have a pigment in the skin we call melanin. And melanin determines the color of the skin. And what these chemical agents seek to do is, while they are applied on the skin, they get into the skin and prevent the process of melanin production. Melanin gives the darker skin tone. So anything that stops or prevents the production of melanin then reverses the ability of the skin to give that darker skin tone. And so we see the lightening effect of the skin.
So why would the FDA ban such if people, adults, decide to use such?
It has its consequence. Like the chemical agent that is being banned, hydroquinone. You know, hydroquinone has a medicinal property in its ability to control the melasma, freckles, and then acne, or dark spots, what we is commonly referred to as dark spots. But these clinical conditions are such that it has to be under the supervision of a healthcare professional or a physician, or what we commonly refer to as a doctor. So these products are not supposed to be used on a daily basis because they are medicine. And as a medicinal product, you can't be using it every day for life. That is, if the need does not arise, and if it's not under a doctor's prescription or supervision. So it means when you use it for a period of time and the darkening, it goes off, you have to stop or you have to discontinue, because the prolonged use over time, you get the side effects of that product, which include skin thinning. Because after a period of time, it takes away, you know, the skin is in layers. The epidermis and the dermis. The epidermis is the upper layer, which has its role and function. You see, to protect the inner layers of the skin. And over time, if the product is used over a long period of time, it takes off certain layers, the outer layers of the skin. And so the protective function of that outer layer is taken off. And the inner layers are also not designed to withstand mechanical pressure and to withstand the physical pressure of the environment. And so then, you have to have the slightest impact, then there's an opening. And not just that, it also takes away the photoprotective ability of the outer layer and so exposes the inner layer of the sun's ultraviolet rays, which can also be cancerous or can lead to skin cancer. So it has its effects. And so then the FDA has weighed the benefits and the risk, and then decided in consultation with other stakeholders and the healthcare professionals. I'm talking of doctors, medical association, dermatology association, and the like. We've come to a conclusion that it's time to put a stop to it. But the ban, we discontinued this hydroquinone to be used in cosmetics is now enforced, also in line with the Ghana standard for cosmetic products, because hydroquinone is also listed in the Ghana standards as substances, which are also not permitted in cosmetic products. So the FDA, in effect, is also enforcing that GS standard to make sure that this chemical agent are not in cosmetic products. However, they can be available on the market to be used as medicinal products, because the doctors have a function and a need of this chemical agent in other ointments and creams to help treat or prevent some skin-related conditions. And any product treat or prevent any skin-related condition cannot be classified as a cosmetic, but as a drug.
Oh, okay. All right, so it means they are not entirely dangerous once you are able to go through the lay down procedures.
Exactly.
So when was this ban?
The ban, it took effect August 1st, 2016. There was a circular which came into effect in June 2015. So then we gave a year because some products were registered with 2% hydroquinone. But we were not processing any new applications, and the FDA was not allowing any imports of any cosmetic product containing hydroquinone. What we did was to allow the ones on the market for manufacturers and then importers to mop up so that the ones on the market are rid of the market. And then we are also allowed them to also reformulate these products and then place other chemical agents other than hydroquinone in these products and then put them on the market.
Okay.
So then with effect from last year, it took effect. And but the time frame, we gave some time for the mop-up, and that also ended in January this year. So from this year, we don't expect to see any hydroquinone-containing cosmetic products on the market, technically.
When you see them, what happens?
Then it means you've gone contrary, you've gone against, you contravene the Public Health Act 851. And there are sanctions, there are penalties to that effect.
So does it include locally made ones too?
It's every, whether locally manufactured, imported, distributed, that the ones that are being offered for sale, they are all part. The directive is, the FDA does not want to see any cosmetic product containing hydroquinone on the Ghanaian market.
So it means when you buy any product and the constituent element contains hydroquinone, you shouldn't use it?
No, you shouldn't use it because of the health consequences associated with the prolonged use of this chemical agent in cosmetic products.
So
you should not use it.
Do you regulate the bigger companies like the malls when they bring in some of these things onto the market?
We do. Because if you import any product that is classified as, for the sake of this communication, that is classified as a cosmetic, then you have to go through the regulatory requirements that is set by the FDA before you can import and place them on the market. So it doesn't matter whether you are a supermarket, whether it's a mall, whether it's a distributor, whether it's a manufacturer, a cosmetic is a cosmetic. And so you have to go by the requirements that have been set or stipulated by the Food and Drugs Authority.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
I'm very grateful.
Emmanuel Nkrumah is the head of Cosmetics and Household Chemicals Department of the Food and Drugs Authority. We also have on the line a cosmetologist and chief executive officer of FC Beauty and Perfumery, Chika Obin Kamara. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Hello, good evening.
Your title is very big, cosmetologist. Who is a cosmetologist?
A cosmetologist really deals with hair, skin, nails, pedicure, manicure. So it's an all-round person in the beauty industry. However, actually, I'm a molecular biologist, and that is my profession. So I handle more of R&D of the kind of products we manufacture, and I manage the skin clinic as well.
Well, in Ghana, FC stands tall when it comes to cosmetics and these things. Do you support the ban of bleaching creams?
We have been at the forefront of anti-bleaching, of the anti-bleaching campaign for many years now. Some years ago, hydroquinone was not banned, and indeed, even some of the products that we used to manufacture locally had 2% at the time it was approved. 2% of hydroquinone in there. But I think for about even 4 or 5 years now, the products that we manufacture, because literature had come out long ago about the harmful effects of prolonged use of hydroquinone and even the abuse of hydroquinone. So the Food and Drugs Authority and the Standard Authority, you know, started making some noise about, you know, hydroquinone, the effects of prolonged use of hydroquinone, but it wasn't truly enforced, as, you know, Mr. Emmanuel was saying, until recently. And yes, there's an influx of a lot of hydroquinone products in the market. I mean, a lot of work, good work is being done to rid the system of these products. But if you take a walk, and I do this very regularly, to Makola, the hub of the cosmetics industry in Ghana, you'll be amazed by the kind of products that you will find that claim to bleach you overnight in 4 days, 3 days. You know, there's body peeling oils, there's half-cast creams, you know, you name it. And I usually take trips to Makola, especially because of the kind of cases that I have to attend to in the clinic. You know, people have damaged, layers of damaged skin. There's hyperpigmentation, which presents itself as nen swabbing, popularly known, or opongospes, right on the cheeks, under the eyes. The skin becomes so sensitive that blood vessels begin to erupt. The skin loses its integrity and its function to protect itself. So then you find that there's something somewhat like an open wound on the skin. You know, people cannot heal when they get scars. And when they get wounds, they don't scar properly. The scar formation is disrupted because the skin has been abused. You see, and it's great that now the enforcement is, you know, is being put out, because some of the key players in the cosmetic industry here in Ghana, most of the market is selling hydroquinone-based products. You see? So, and it's for cheap. You can get hydroquinone-based products for about 8 CDs, 10 CDs, you know, for a full lotion.
Okay.
Do you get what I mean? So why should someone want to spend, and this is the thinking of the masses, why do they want to spend 20 CDs for, if in the same vein they want to tone or fade away a blemish or a dark spot, they will need to spend maybe 20 CDs when they can get a product on the local market for 8 CDs, which can give them lighter skin in 4 days. And you see, we should not deceive ourselves. Most people who go out to get cosmetics, unfortunately, want to lighten their skin. You know, we can be all nice about it and say, oh, you know, the Ghanaian woman is, or the Ghanaian man, because men are bleaching too. It's discerning, and they don't want to harm them. They are educated, and they still want to bleach.
We hear toning, bleaching. Are they the same?
They are not supposed to be the same, but unfortunately, you know, the labeling is done such that now toning creams also bleach. But I'll tell you the main difference between toning and bleaching. Toning really is using a skin lightener. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's the lightener, the active ingredient may be maybe a plant-based skin lightener. For example, maybe kojic acid or lemon extracts. These are very plant-based, natural skin lightness, which will just fade away a dark spot or a blemish or a scar over a period. It cannot lighten your skin more than what your natural color is. That is what toning is supposed to be. Bleaching, on the other hand, is using a cosmetic product to actually disrupt the production of melanin, which gives us our dark pigmentation, which has all the protective functions to also help protect us from the sun. So bleaching takes away the production of melanin, or stops or slows down the production of melanin. When Imano was saying something about hydroquinone being a controlled substance should be left for doctors to recommend, which is very true. Because in certain cases, the doctor needs to recommend a 2% based hydroquinone product for you to use over a short period to you know, fade away the any dark pigmentation, hyperpigmentation situation, and then stop. So it has to be monitored. But even most of the products that we market, when you see how fast it's able to bleach the skin, that even that 2%, there's more than 2% of hydroquinone in the product.
So it's possible you get a product on the market that can, for instance, take away a scar without bleaching the skin?
It's very possible. And these are supposed to be toning creams. Do you understand?
Yes.
It will not take away the scar. A scar cannot be taken away by a toning cream or a skin lightener. But it will fade away, you know, the very dark pigmentation that you get on a scar. It will be able to fade that away so that the skin would be a flawless complexion. The scar and their normal skin color would be the same.
Madam, before coming to the studio for purpose of this production, I visited one of the shops, specifically FC Beauty. And what I noticed was that they don't sell one particular product. They will tell you that take this, add this, add sometimes three different components. Mm-hmm. Is it that if one is unable to purchase the three combination, the consequences could be dire?
No. This is what happens. You see, every product has the threshold of an active ingredient that you can put. If you go over that threshold, maybe one will be 1%, maybe one will say 2% at most in one product, okay? If you go over that, then it becomes toxic to the user. It means you may have to stagger the active ingredient components in different phases, for example, in a soap or in a cream or in a lotion. So you know that the soap is just a short-term use. It will be rinsed off. But in that 2 minutes that you're using the soap, for example, it will also be performing its function. Okay? Some people would like to use this product A, mix it with product B, and then come and use product C. It may be a problem where the active ingredients will clash. So to be safer, if you're using one line, it's better to use the range. For example, the soap, the toner, and then the cream or the sun protector, then you are sure that you are covered reaction whatsoever. Your cosmetic retailer or the product is able to say, oh, okay, maybe you are reacting to this or that. Do you understand?
Yes.
It makes it better for you to see results faster if you have a blemish condition or acne condition than if you mix products. So it starts with skincare products, it's always safer to go for a product range that allows you to have one particular active ingredient or two at a time rather than just mixing all together, because the skin may complain and you will not know exactly what active ingredient you are complaining, the skin is complaining about if you mix the different brands.
So how long does it take, say, an accidental user of hydroquinone before the person will be able to notice the effect?
An accidental
Yes,
user.
You don't know that it is bad for you. You're just using it.
Okay. The truth of the matter is some of the products in the market do not even declare they have hydroquinone in there.
Okay.
Okay, so these are products that have not been registered, and you find a lot on the market. When you go to Makola, you will see a lot. And how long will it take? Some will promise you within a week you should see you should see a marked improvement in the skin color within a week.
If some people are suffering from that and they want to restore their normal skin in Ghana, is that possible?
It's very, very possible to restore the skin. It also depends on the level of damage that has been caused. For example, if you use hydroquinone based or bleaching products over maybe 2 years, 6 months, about that time, you begin to see the telltale signs of this, okay? And the skin becomes thin, okay? the skin becomes thin, you see redness, the skin is becomes sensitive and very, it gets irritated very easily, it breaks out, that sort of thing. Or you can find a thick layer of skin building where the sensitivity has happened. If you use hydroquinone for a very long time, you even begin to have male-like features. For example, the deposits of hydroquinone in your bloodstream begins to give you imbalanced hormones. So you begin to have a hoarse voice, maybe hair, facial hairs, your skin becomes very thick, like leather. It has a leathery feel. We call this ochronosis in beauty therapy. If you want to restore your skin, it depends on the level of damage. Some people would need about 6 months of facial treatment, you know, once a week or once every other week. Just encouraging the skin, helping skin cells, new cells to be, helping cells turn over. So that's a hard, crusty form. That's a protective function from the wound that has been caused by the bleaching product.
And is FC able to do that?
Oh, yes. We have a lot of cases of people who have success stories. Recently, we were featured on CNN where one of our clients happily laid down for us to use her as an example of such cases. And she had done the facial for about 5 months, and there was marked improvement on her skin, you know. But the truth of the matter is that those who bleach, no one can tell you it's accidental, eh? Those who bleach, once we begin to repair their skin and they see that their skin is functioning well, you know, they go back to the bleaching product. They say, oh, FC product, yeah, I check. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Because of the lightness. Because if you are moving someone from a bleaching product, you have to give them an alternative that's able to do what they want, but without the harmful side effects. Do you get me? But after their skin becomes better, they still want to go back to their face. My color to be brighter, but me per se, my color me eba. And that's that. So once the problem is solved, they want to go back to the issue.
Are you nationwide?
FC.
Yes.
We are have branches nationwide, but the good thing is we have student reputation, because we have a lot of beauty therapists and cosmetologists who come and train, and I'm Kumasi, Takradi, all over, and who are beauty, so they are ambassadors of what we are preaching.
For us here, those of us in the media, both men and women, they use a lot. We use a lot of, I think they call it pawns. I don't know if I'm right. And the ladies out there to do a lot of makeup. Do these things also have some implications on the skin?
Okay. Please, let me check this in before I answer this makeup question. Apart from hydroquinone, there are other harmful things in the system, okay? So it's just a shout-out to the Food and Drugs Authority and Standard Authority. It's not just, I've been saying makola, 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 but it's not just makola.
Okay.
On Facebook, online, people are mixing their own products in their homes. And they are posting it or using these Okada, the courier services, to deliver these items that have not been proved, that have not been tested and verified or certified. And people are using these things. And I am dealing with people who come to FC with juice on their skin, with sauce on their skin from using some special soap concoction to take away acne or pimples or to make their skin light. To use creams and stuff which have no labeling at all. On Facebook and on Instagram, people are making a lot of money by damaging people's skin. And when you go to find them, you don't know where to get them. They have no real response, no real treatment protocol, nothing, no help. Recently, I battled a lady, very popular figure in Ghana here. She's decided to go into cosmetics. And she's selling all very beautifully packaged products.
And a client came to me with sauce on her face. So I picked up the phone and I called the lady. He said, you know, I said, businesswoman to businesswoman, I want to draw your attention to what your product is doing. You know, my client is here and I can see that the damage as against the listed ingredients on your product don't match up, you know. And she's called you back, but you say there's nothing you can do for her. So I want to draw your attention before I inform the Food and Drug Authority. You know what she said to me? She said to me that what is my business?
Wow.
If the client has come to me, I should just take my money and fix the client and stop calling her about this.
Very unfortunate. Then we have just 1 minute to end the show. My pawns question.
Your pawns question. Makeup is to enhance the skin. Okay, it also forms a protective layer to block the harmful UV rays. So making up and making up the right way is good, but at the end of the day, you need a good makeup remover to remove all the makeup before you go to sleep.
Oh.
Otherwise, it will block your pores. And you end up having some breakouts or pimples or rashes on your face.
Oh, okay.
Because while you're sleeping, it will not allow your skin to breathe.
Shika, we are very, 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 very grateful to you tonight on our shows. Very grateful. We've learned a lot. Shika Obin Kamara is the CEO of FC Beauty and Perfumery. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Some of your text messages. Solo in Medina says, where was Bank of Ghana when these banks were winning heavy, heavy awards? You're asking. Hey, you Farouk Tamale. Good evening to you, George. In fact, the central bank must also take over the care of the workers of UT and Capital Banks. George, I felt so embarrassed in the administration of NDC after 8 years. Justice or Pambo, I have a coupon sent in that one. I am Joshua from Bazuo in the Binduri district. Tell the Minister of Education to pay teachers arrears for 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016. Well, teachers must be rich. Hi, George. God bless you very much. I can't afford to miss this program. Charles Akan, you get from Miracle sent in that. I thank George for the good things you're doing for Ghana. Behind the News, simply the best. Napoleon, Tunu Sankofa based. May Allah have mercy on the people of Sierra Leone. And Azibo Winwenchi sent in that. Abdullahi in Tolon district says, I think the decision taken by the government of Ghana to offer a helping hand to people of Sierra Leone is very commendable. Philip Kubresu in Ofensu North says, it is very good that the Bank of Ghana has started investigating the two banks. Mashud Kukum Tamale, NPP, ISMS Group President, says, Ghana's economy must work under the competent leadership of Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia. And Mustafa in Tamale says, the collapse of these two banks was a result of mismanagement by the former administration. Mr. Akunli at Roman Ridge says, good evening, George. The government is delaying us. We need jobs. Our time is up, and thank you for your time. My producers have been Asibi Bangu Ikela, Seth Eya, John Pobi, Beland Elom Tete, and Sewell Nanama Ajikum. Patience Dovlu Amwa was our sound engineer. And I'm George Asikri. Have a nice weekend.